What's up, guys? Welcome to the Behind the Deal podcast, where we explore growth through acquisition. Whether you're a private equity fund manager looking to expand your portfolio or a business owner aiming to scale and build lasting value through acquisition, each of our episodes will break down the strategies, stories, the lessons that make acquisition one of the most powerful paths to growth. I hope you enjoy. All right, guys, welcome back to the Behind the Deal podcast. I'm Joe Zenke, your host. Today's episode, I am joined by Jeff Gagno. He's a managing director and co-founder of Geneva Glen Capital out of Chicago. Jeff and I have a great conversation. Super informative, you know, has been doing private equity for the last 3 decades, cut his chops at one of the biggest and baddest firms in Chicago before kind of going out on his own. And, you know, we talk about how taking, you know, an excellent operator and plugging them into, you know, a growing business, it can be a tremendous strategy. We talk about when, you know, executing add-ons is the right move versus when it might be the wrong move. And, you know, you always hear a lot of people get into why it might be the wrong move sometimes to start doing add-ons too early. You know, if you start doing them too early, you start doing them at the wrong time, you don't integrate them correctly. So Jeff gives some great insight there and on a number of different topics. So I hope you enjoy this one. I thought it was very informative and kind of learned a lot. So thanks. Hey, Jeff, good to see you. What's going on?
Just another day in paradise here in the private equity world. So it's fall in Chicago. Leaves haven't changed. The weather's great, great golf weather. So it's my favorite month of the year.
Beautiful golf weather. We got some cool golf coming up with the Ryder Cup, which is always an exciting event that I'm looking forward to hopefully tuning into at least a little bit this weekend. It's going to be awesome.
Looking forward to it.
Awesome, man. Well, look, I'm really happy to have you. You know, you've had an extensive career in private equity and, you know, are still, doing a lot of deals and you guys are, you know, seem to be, just building on a nice little portfolio of companies. But I wanted to kind of start here with, you know, when did you realize that this is what you wanted to do, right? This private equity world, buying companies. When did you realize that not only this is what you wanted to do, but that, you know, this is something that you were good at and could make a career out of?
No, thanks, Joe. So, a little bit of my background. From Chicago, went to school in Midwest, Indiana, and then Kellogg Northwestern. I worked as a CPA like a lot of people did, an auditor for a couple of years, and that sort of taught me, and I got a degree in accounting undergrad. It taught me how to like be numbers and read numbers and sort through what's real earnings, what's not. Great experience. And then post Northwestern Kellogg, I worked in management consulting for a couple of years and really liked that because it was more bigger picture, strategic, qualitative. But still I had this yearning for, I like to get into companies, understanding what makes them tick, but I didn't like being a consultant. I'd rather put my money where my mouth is, invest in companies, not be a stock picker, but really get into the intricate details of a business and, you know, figure out, is this a good business to own long term? And perhaps it's a little undermanaged or sleepy and there's things we can do with it to make it better. So that was where my yearning for private equity was. And I was fortunate to start 35 years ago at one of the largest private equity firms in Chicago at the time. It's now GTCR, yep, which is one of the largest firms in the Midwest or in the country, actually.
Yep.
Super experience. And that was just a total immersion. I had the blessings to work for one of the, you know, the original founders of private equity, Carl Thoma, who, he'd be in the Hall of Fame if there is such a thing. I think he's received multiple awards like that.
Sure.
And Carl was, he's very quick to the point and it sort of gave me a lot of rope to just go figure it out, you know, and didn't have probably the patience to really teach me with the training course. But I just got immersed and I was a sponge. I was young at the time and, just ran with it. And the thing I liked about my experience there at GTCR was a couple things. One is they really embrace this model of if we can find a good business and then find a excellent operating executive that can come in and be able to take the company to the next level. So not just financial engineering, because back then in the early 90s, there's a lot of deals done that were just leveraged up. And if things worked out great, you made a lot of money. If they didn't, you lost your money. It was kind of, it was more of a gunslinger days back in private equity. But this model of attracting, you know, really talented executives from an industry just worked great. And I was fortunate, you know, what we do it back then is we would take an industry, go study it, and then go try to find companies or the best talented executives in that industry and back them. And that's the first deal I kind of cut my teeth on was in the office equipment dealership industry. So think of old line copiers, sure. You know, these are machines that are, they break down, they need service, there's consumables. It was a nice business until, you know, ultimately paper is shrunk. But cold called an executive at the time, Tom Johnson, who was one of the leaders in that industry and was able to convince him to come up to Chicago, meet my partners, and we ended up backing him. And we start with an $8 million business that we bought in Texas, San Antonio, and then proceeded to make 100 acquisitions, separate different companies. Wow. Over 13 years. Company went public halfway into that. And then ultimately we were, the big competitors were taking notice and Xerox said, you know, we gotta stop these guys. So let's buy them. So they ended up buying the business for $1.5 billion. And that ended up being a 20 times return on the original equity. So that was just a fantastic experience. And since then, I worked at another large private equity firm in Chicago as a partner there for 11 years and then had the yearnings to go start my own firm, Geneva Glenn. Did that 17 years ago and it was just me originally and then built a team out with a couple people I've known from the past. And three of us as partners have been working together for the last 15 years. Really enjoy doing that. We're doing similar things where we find talented operating executives with deep domain expertise and then go find a business. They don't necessarily have to run it, but they could just be an active board member or even a hybrid, which is like a chairman.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, it sounds like, you know, the foundation of not only your career, but the foundation of your investment thesis is, you know, gaining and leveraging experience, you know, leveraging not only understanding the financials of a business for you, and really diving in, you know, and being that auditor and really understanding, you know, what makes a business go from a spreadsheet standpoint. But then, you know, when it comes to how you built your career, you know, at one of the best firms under one of the best, you know, potential mentors that you could have found and gaining real experience and seeing real results before diving in on your own. And then, you know, again, taking kind of that same understanding of like, hey, it really takes doing this and understanding, it really takes doing something and understanding something deeply in order to achieve, you know, outsized success in growing it. And so starting with, you know, that operator and starting with that operational excellence is what's ultimately going to allow, you know, a company to go from 8 million to, you know, tremendous growth or just, you know, go public or anything like that. I think it makes all the sense in the world. And I think that, you know, for anybody out there who's like considering buying a business, you know, it's one of those things where if you're going to be the operator, you know, go towards a path that you really understand, or if you're going to buy a business, you know, make sure that whoever is ultimately going to be in charge of the day to day has, you know, you can leverage, their career and their, you know, their experiences. And especially, you know, if you're buying a smaller business, but you can leverage someone who's been a part of a much larger organization and seen what it takes to grow and operate at that level, you know, I think it's a simple strategy when you just say it out loud. But at the same time, it's one that, you know, I think not everyone's utilizing the right way. You know, they're maybe buying companies based on just, you know, market trends or, you know, where they're seeing maybe an industry going versus like a true deep understanding of it.
Agreed. And yeah, we've these days at Geneva Glenn, we've you know, I've worked on earlier in my career, much larger mid-cap deals, we call mid-cap, you know, typically $200 million to $1 billion in value, somewhere in that range. And I've really enjoyed going back to the smaller businesses, the more micro cap, or what's known as lower middle market. And that's like for us, 20 to 100 million in value. Just find that, you know, there's more, you know, more things you can do with a business of that size. It has enough critical mass, like it's a real business. It's not a startup, but typically it hasn't built out the management team. And if we could start with a company of that size and then bring in, like you said, an executive who has scaled a business at least to that size, if not multiples higher than that, and they've done it on behalf of a corporate owner or a family, and they really didn't have much equity, or they never had a liquidity event, and they're like, I've invested all this time, I know what to do, and I'm just chomping the bit. I want to go out there. I want to hunt. I want to find that platform company. That's you know, that's our ideal sort of partner in the deals we're doing today at Geneva Glen. It's sort of that accomplished executive. They've got a lot of fire in the belly. They've had success, but maybe they haven't had that big payday or pot of gold yet, and they're still very hungry. Mm-hmm. That's a typical type of executive we like to back these days. And, you know, it's often executives who are, you know, they worked in sales, they worked in corporate development. They're comfortable with the hunt, you know, going find a business. Sure. And that's where we help them, you know, develop the research list, the list of target companies. We go out there and we find those gems out there. And it's interesting. It seems daunting, right? You're going to contact business owners trying to convince them to sell. But if you're a proven operator from companies that the entrepreneur would recognize, they'll take your call. And that's worked very well for us. We did that specifically in the home health and hospice industry about 10 years ago. We backed an executive who was at the, you know, tail end of his career. He didn't want to run something full time. He didn't want to be on the front line, so to speak, of battle, but rather had just a ton of knowledge that he can contribute. And he was able to unearth a former target company when he was at his prior $250 million business he ran in the past. So we backed Rick, and that worked out exceptionally well. We were able to triple the earnings in 5 years. I say we, wow. It's really Rick and the team he had helped us build out, as well as the original entrepreneurs. They stayed on. They rolled over. They owned 20% of the company going forward. And that was another big success. And then since then, we've gone on and done another one with Rick. We sold that business. We had strategic interest. We had four strategic buyers nipping at our heels saying, you know, we've heard what you've done. You've built the number two player in the Philadelphia market. And we really like to own that asset. So we were fortunate we had multiple people interested, and we just sold the company ourselves, and that worked out. So we bought the business in I think it was 16, and we sold in 21. So again, that was about 8x return on our equity. Wish it could all work out like that.
I mean, yeah.
I don't have plenty of scar tissue for ones that didn't exactly go to plan. we could talk about that, but you know, when it works great.
Awesome. Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear some of the challenges that have come up, but, you know, so when it comes to how you guys structure what you do, right, you mentioned, you know, returns on equity, with a couple of the deals that you've done in your past, but, is Geneva Glen, do you operate more as an independent sponsor or a fund?
We operate as an independent sponsor, and that's by design. We feel like, you know, we could go out and raise capital. That's the world I come from. You know, the two large firms that I worked with in the past, syndicated funds. But I like having the flexibility. If, you know, we tell people we'll look at companies as small as 3 million of earnings, EBITDA, up to about 25 million. And those are pretty wide goalposts to have, which gives us the ability to look at many different size businesses. that'd be really hard to do with a typical, we call it syndicated fund, where, you know, it's kind of rinse, lather, repeat. You go out and you go out and raise money, pitching right. your track record, go raise this money, and then you got to deploy it. You have 5 years to deploy it. And typically you've got to be very kind of consistent in terms of the size deals you do. So you have much more narrow focus, mm-hmm. as well as these days, you often have to be more specialized. Say, I'm going to just do healthcare deals. I'm just going to do tech deals, what have you, because our industry has gotten, you know, much more competitive. You know, I've kind of witnessed this. There's thousands of private equity firms now. Right. And, you know, I understand why they do that, because there are as much in the fundraising business as they are in the investing business.
Right.
For us, we can take our time and, you know, we'll do one or two deals a year, but we can cherry pick the best ones where we think it has the most growth potential. And our firm is not large. I mean, we're a relatively small firm in terms of staffing, but, you know, for us, we really lean heavily on our operating partners, as I described before, the yep. executives with the deep domain expertise that can come in and they can look at a business and pick it apart. And they'll have, you know, much more nuanced view than we ever will, because, you know, candidly, we're not operators. I mean, typically in the private equity world, some people are wired both ways, I guess. You're usually a deal guy or an operating executive.
Yeah.
And that's where we spend a lot of time meeting operating executives who truly have this desire to buy a business, be an owner, have a stake. We do meet a lot of executives who are, you know, they're really interested in just finding their next job. And we're just another, private equity is just another distribution channel for them to go find their next opportunity, you know, usually within a portfolio company, which could work. And we've done that before, but our core focus is to go find those hunters with deep domain expertise and a successful track record. And go find that nugget of a business we can start with, and then hopefully make some add-on acquisitions too.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. I always like to hear the reasoning behind, you know, why someone chooses one strategy versus the other. And, you know, your explanation for why you guys do it the way you do it makes perfect sense to me. So you mentioned add-ons too. So at what point, you know, post acquisition, once you buy this company, you get the operator in there, you know, you start working through, you know, improving it internally and everything like that. At what point do you start considering, you know, doing add-ons and doing bolt-ons and buying more businesses? How big of a piece of the strategy is that within the growth?
We'd like it to be a big part if it makes sense. You know, if the industry is fragmented enough where there's thousands of companies, then it makes sense. And the office equipment dealership industry is super fragmented. We did 100 acquisitions. I mean, that's but 13 years. So it was very measured. I think we're, you know, back to where the scar tissue is when you buy a business and then you try to do acquisitions before you figured out what you actually bought. There's always this, it's like when you go buy a house and you kind of live in there for a while and you're like, oh, I didn't realize, you know, the furnace is going to go or whatever, sort of the quirks come out. And then and the analogy would be with a company is, it's figuring out who the talent is, who the executives are. They're going to get you to the promised land. Yeah. And there may be gaps in the company. I mean, the reality is a lot of entrepreneurs, they're great, but they're frugal and they don't want to invest ahead. Plus they feel like they can do a lot of things and it's their baby, right? So they may not trust bringing somebody and delegating. So they tend to be very hands-on in a variety of ways. They may not have a CFO, for instance. They might just outsource that to a bookkeeper who's part-time and think that that's going to get them by because they don't value that function as much. When you start making acquisitions, you need a really strong operating model as well as a finance function. And the reason is you're integrating these companies, doing this for so many decades. You've seen where... There was a time when people would just aggregate companies together. They call them roll-ups. So even, I think some people even call them poof companies, where you instantly would just, on paper, you would buy ownership, majority ownership in 10 companies, package them up, buy them, but you never really integrate them. That's a disaster waiting to happen, usually, just because you don't have any span of control. You often, because of that, the leadership is very dispersed.
Right.
So you don't have the control. So it's figuring out what you bought first and then figuring out, you know, do I need to upgrade the team? Do I need to bring in other key executives? And then you have, so I'd say that's usually what happens that first year. You know, usually you have like a 100-day plan of, okay, here's all the initiatives you want to do after the day after your close, and you do that. And then, you know, the part of the challenge, though, frankly, is acquisitions, especially if it's not a largely fragmented industry, when there is one available, you know, it's going to be gone. So sometimes you maybe have to be a little more, okay, this is opportunistic. This came along. We just bought this business 6 months ago. Then you figure it out. Maybe you buy that, run it separately, and then you ultimately merge that together. So, but that's an integral part of the strategy, how private equity makes money, because it's very simple. If you buy a number of smaller companies and you aggregate them together, the multiple of earnings you pay, you know, is going to be lower than what you're going to exit at. So the more low multiple businesses you can buy, the better, as long as, as long as the wheels don't come off, so to speak, meaning you never built that infrastructure. That makes sense.
It makes total sense. Yeah, no, I think, and like you said, you've kind of earned your stripes throughout your years, you know, seeing, you know, the great side of doing those, you know, with that deal you mentioned in the, you know, where you guys made over 100 acquisitions, versus, you know, maybe the, what could go wrong if you do it too quickly and don't do it the right way. And maybe seeing some peers and other people who have, you know, taken that more roll up approach and say, hey, we're just going to buy as much as we can quickly and then try to get some sort of, you know, EBITDA arbitrage, without actually integrating it. And, you know, it can start to fall apart a little bit. What signals do you guys use to decide when it's time to exit a portfolio company?
You know, it's, you want to sell when things are going well, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Right. It's hard to sell. Like if your car's falling apart and you try and trade it in, they're going to give you a low ball offer. Right.
Yeah.
I would make the analogy there, but it's when things are going well, you got good growth, there's good tailwinds, the industry's in favor. I mentioned that in the home health and hospice industry. So our timing was definitely right there, and we were peaking in terms of growth. I'd say it's when we sell, though, it's something typically you're going to have very smart buyers kicking the, you know, they're going to pick apart the business. So it's not like you're going to quickly put it out for auction and try to do a quick sale. People are measured and they'll do their homework. So you got to be prepared to sell a business. And what I mean is it's going to be the, you know, proctology exam.
Yeah,
it's going to get very deep, and they're going to pick apart the business. And that's very draining, particularly if you go through a traditional auction process, meaning you hire a investment banker, goes out, markets the companies to, you know, perhaps a couple hundred parties. They run interference until they whittle down to maybe 10 that are, you know, interested in meeting. But that's very fatiguing on a management team. So you got to be up for that marathon. The business has to be performing well, because you are, you know, you're going to be taking your eye off the ball somewhat, because you're going to be consumed with, the management team is going to be consumed with, fielding all these questions. So,
right.
So that's really it, you know, selling at a time of position of strength. And, you know, throughout our whole period, we're always open to conversations with people of, you know, we're curious about your portfolio company. Maybe now's not the right time. We get to know the potential buyers. So when the time is right, but, you know, a good investment banker too, will you know, easily earn their fee if just for making sure that you've got somebody who is really providing a process, if you will.
Oh yeah.
When you sell a business.
It is. It's funny. I feel like one thing I've noticed being on both sides, right? So we do at Deal Gym, we do mostly buy side work, you know, working with PE funds, helping them find businesses to buy. But then we also do some sell side work. And, you know, my partner, Brian, kind of heads up most of the sell side stuff. But at the same time, you know, I've noticed a couple different things I've noticed when it comes to selling. One, the PE funds, right? They enjoy proprietary deals because, you know, there's an opportunity to talk to some, you know, not just an opportunity to talk to a business owner who isn't on the market yet and might not be, you know, advertising themselves for sale. But at the same time, you know, they're avoiding, you know, the little birdie in their ear as the banker, you know, who's advising them on every little step of the way. But then when it, so, you know, they tell us like, hey, proprietary. And then when they go to sell businesses, oftentimes they echo kind of what you said, which is like, hey, we have to, you know, this is the time to bring in a really good investment banker because they're going to earn their fee. So it's, you know, they understand the power of, you know, a good banker. And they understand, like you said, earning their fee. I mean, you know, we just did a deal that we, you know, were able to close a month ago, a little bit of a smaller transaction, but it was a nice day for our firm. But we look back on like, you know, the call logs, you know, over the last, call it 3-4 weeks of, you know, diligence of that business. And I think there was like 200 plus phone calls, you know, with management team and the banker and just going back and forth. And it's like the hours and hours and hours and time it's spent on the phone, you know, kind of making sure every little detail and every little, you know, box is checked. You do earn the fee, and there and selling the company, you know, it's a total roller coaster. Like you said, it's a slog for the management team. And their emotions, you know, are going up and down, and you know, every new ask, it could be the tipping point where they're like, hey, they throw their hands up in the air and they're like, all right, well, like, when is enough? Or with you guys, you know, but it's, you know, you end up finding yourself being, you know, half psychiatrist at the same time too, like making sure that, you know, they understand like, hey, this is part of it. Like you said, the proctology exam, like they're going to dig in, you know, keep your head down, focus on what they're asking you for, you know, we'll help you negotiate, but at the same time, make sure the business is continuing to perform, right? Because, you know, any dip in performance, you know, might be a dip in the deal. So it's a difficult thing to exit a company and do it at the right time and get everything you want out of it. And sometimes that piece of the process might get, you know, overlooked at it's a nice thing because, you know, it's signaling that you've had success hopefully with growing the acquisition, but at the same time, it's a slog of a process, and, you know, the reward is usually hopefully pretty good at the end, but it's not the easiest thing in the world to do.
No, absolutely. And, you know, Joe, with you on the buy side, you know, I entrepreneurs, sometimes they don't want to go through a whole sell side process, right? So right. It gives them the ability to sort of say, yeah, I may be interested in selling if I find the right, you know, the right purchaser, and they're able to, you know, negotiate on more on a one-off basis with somebody. And not have to go and, you know, task the whole management team with fielding all these inquiries at just one party. Mm-hmm. If it works out, great. You see if the chemistry's there. You get to know the buyer, if you want to, particularly if you want to stay on. So I definitely see a role for, you know, on the buy side. And we work with high quality buy side firms like yourself that really, you know, are able to, like you said, be that psychiatrist, be that go-between, advise them on here's how it's going to work, but you can do it on a very discreet basis. The problem is, one problem is with owners I find is they don't want their employees to find out,
right?
Their vendors to find out, their customers to find out, they're going through a sale process. So it's really hard to keep that under wraps. And, you know, often when you go through a formal auction process and you're just going out to hundreds of people, the word gets out, it comes back, and then you got panic people, and then you're, you know, you got to be ready for that, or figure out, you know, who's the who's the small cadre of lieutenants that you want to bring under the tent to help, you know, help facilitate things. So that's counsel to give is, you know, make sure you're, you realize, you know, it's not like when you're selling a house and you put up an MLS listing and the world knows you're selling your house, you have a sign out. It's the opposite. And people always often wonder, like, why don't owners just do that? Why don't they just do a public auction? It's for those reasons, because this isn't, you know, bricks and mortar and bedrooms. It's people. And if those key people leave the business, you're going to be harmed. So, so that's where I think, you know, on the buy side, there's a good in between there where you can sort of work at your own pace, and you can just, the owners can cherry pick in terms of, okay, this is, I'm willing to talk to these people because they don't sound like all those other Wall Street types. They really have something different to ask. They have an operator in tow. So anyway, just food for thought.
It's definitely great food for thought. I think, you know, one strategy that we've tried to deploy in growing our business is hiring and working with other people who have, you know, either own another business or have sold another business, because they can really relate to the founders they're talking about. Like, hey, I've sat in your seat before. You know, I'm not just a guy who is sitting behind the computer punching Excel spreadsheets and, you know, or has a, you know, a fancy business degree. I'm a guy who has grown a company, has hired employees, has taken on, you know, the risk of signing leases and taking on, you know, and maybe personally guaranteeing loans and things like that to grow a company, right? So I've sat in your seat before. I understand what goes into growing and running a company. And I also understand what goes into, you know, a successful sale. And so we try to, you know, relate to these guys as much as possible. And I think that is obviously a pretty big part of your strategy too, with having that operational background, right? You can say, hey, the reason why we're interested in you is because we have, you know, some operational expertise coming into this space with us, and we, you know, a deep understanding of it. And that person who you're, you know, making that investment with, that operator, you know, they can really connect on a deep level with the seller who, you know, on their space. Because usually, you know, if you're buying a company where someone's ran it, you know, they started it 30 years ago, or maybe it's like fifth generation and, you know, their family's been doing it forever, you know, they eat, sleep, and breathe that world. And they enjoy talking to other people that do too, you know, and they find comfort in, like, all right, well, this guy understands not only what it's like to be a business owner, but he understands what it's like to own a business in my space and grow a business in my space. And you can talk and connect and get a little bit deeper, you know, with those sellers and differentiate, you know, whether it's a competitive process that you're differentiating in, or just a relationship you're building before you, you know, with an entrepreneur who's considering, you know, kicking the tires of selling.
Yeah. I just, for your audience too, I think it's important to there's a variant of selling your business that's an important consideration. If you're a entrepreneur and you've gotten the company to a certain level, but, you know, you're not ready to retire and you're proud of what you built and you want to just take it to the next level, partnering with a private equity firm is going to come in with that operating expertise. And, you know, they're not going to take over the company and they're not going to become the CEO. The entrepreneur stays CEO or could bump up to chairman. We've done that before. And they sell, you know, they sell 51 to 80% of the company, and they retain the 20% stake. 20% to me is kind of, okay, it's meaningful enough that you're going to care, you know?
Yeah.
If it's just like a little stub, then it doesn't really do much for really either party.
Right. But
that's exactly what we did in the home healthcare business. As I mentioned earlier, the one in Philadelphia, Southeastern, they kept 20%. And they made more when we exited the company, because it was eight and a half times return on that 20% than they did at the initial proceeds they got.
That's awesome.
And that is truly a win-win. And the continuity is there. The entrepreneur stays there. The people are like, okay, he's still running the company. He didn't sell out. I mean, there's a sort of buyout, sell out, that it's, you know, you're just off and doing something completely different. There is this in between where it's what's called a recapitalization, essentially. Yeah. So majority recap. And, you know, that's for the right situation with a, you know, a hard charging younger entrepreneur. It just is recognizes they need, they could use help take a next level, or they just want to take some chips off the table. They poured their blood, sweat and tears, and they want to say, I want to put enough money in the bank that I'm set for life. And, but, I'm ready to, you know, for chapter two.
Yeah. I love that strategy. I love the success story that you mentioned. I've actually seen firsthand, one of the sellers that we were representing, they got, you know, found a number of different offers, and the one that had the highest, you know, price tag on it, which is the one they ultimately ended up initially accepting. It came with a, you know, a 20-25% roll, right? So once they did that, they liked, you know, the partner, but then once they got to meet and understand the partner a little bit deeper, what they realized is, hey, we know our business a whole lot better than they do. And if we're going to roll equity, we want to, and also be now a minority owner, you know, that's risky in the sense that like, we're not going to be the ultimate decision maker. So, there's another side to that coin where it's like, I think it's a really good idea if you're doing to do a minority, you know, a recap with somebody, because the outcome that you mentioned, you know, is like the absolute best of both worlds. But just make sure that when you are, you know, that person that you're now partnering with and rolling equity with, also really understands what you do so that you guys can grow together, which again, comes back to your kind of core strategy is like, we're getting in bed with somebody who really knows what they do. And then we're offering these other, you know, potentially excellent operators, additional capital and resources, and somebody who really knows what they do in order to take that business to the next level. And that sticks out, I think, a lot, you know, with entrepreneurs that you're offering that to.
Exactly.
Well, look, Jeff, I really appreciate your time here. Thanks so much for being a part of the podcast and our guest. And, you know, ultimately, if people want to learn a little bit more about you and your firm, where's the best place to do that?
www.genevaglencapital.com.
Beautiful, beautiful. Go right to the website, take a look at what these guys are doing, you know, again, putting together a cool portfolio, building out, you know, some pretty special companies. And, you know, I'm grateful for the relationship we've been able to build over the years, Jeff. And, you know, hopefully we can keep getting deeper and maybe even do a deal, you know, together in the near future.
Excellent, Joe. Enjoyed
it. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate it.
Take care.